Now, if you're a fan of sharks or surfing, stay tuned, because Georgia has been investigating our relationship with these ancient fish.
We are obsessed with having sharks on our screens. There's Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, a film called Sharknado, and obviously Jaws. And this week is actually known as Shark Week in America, with a whole channel devoting their output to shark documentaries. But off the screen, in real life, our relationship with these fish is less than perfect. Shark attacks can stir up tremendous fear, and shark numbers are dwindling due to human activity. To find out more about how our relationship could maybe improve, I went to meet Jamie Oliver, senior curator at Sea Life London Aquarium, and also got to see some of these fish face to face.
We have several species of shark. We've got this one coming towards us now, which is called a brown shark, also known as a sandbar shark. You can see it's got a real classic shark shape, nice large dorsal fin. Just behind it there, we've got a sand tiger shark.
Oh, he's a big fellow, isn't he?
He is. He's one of our biggest sharks at around 10 feet long. Really beautiful animal, actually. Actually quite harmless, but they have this sort of fierce look about them because they're always baring their teeth. So you can always see their teeth. A lot of sharks hide their teeth. You can't see them when they're swimming around, but the sand tigers have always got their teeth on show, and it looks pretty awesome.
Awesome indeed, but also very noisy. So we nip behind the scenes where I asked Jamie about why sharks had such a fearsome reputation.
There is a certain amount of misunderstanding when it comes to sharks. They're really not these dangerous predators, certainly towards humans, that we think they are. And the media do like to shout about it whenever there's a shark bite or a shark injury, because it can be quite intensive in terms of injury. However, for the most part, they need our respect, they need our care, our love, because they're really endangered in many parts of the world.
Shark attacks may be extremely rare, there's only about 70 a year, but there's still pressure to cull them in popular surfing spots like Australia. But perhaps there's a way to make sure people and sharks can share the oceans. Professor Sean Collin at the University of Western Australia has teamed up with Shark Mitigation Systems, and they're using their knowledge of shark biology to design a range of so-called shark-proof wetsuits. I went to visit Sean to have a look at some of these designs, the first of which was a funky blue and teal pattern, and asked him about how they're going about designing these wetsuits.
So our approach was to look at the visual system, firstly, whether sharks can see in colour. And unlike most vertebrates, sharks don't see in colour. They're in fact colourblind. So contrast is more important to them in finding prey than colour is. So we used that information and actually took a lot of light measurements within the water off the coast of WA and tried to work towards a way of camouflaging the silhouette or the high contrast boundary produced by a human in the water, which generally would be dressed in, say, a black wetsuit, for instance, which is the predominant neoprene colour. And so with reflectance measurements of different materials and different colours and knowledge about the light environment that the animals live in, we were able to model and construct the optimal camouflage pattern that could be put onto a wetsuit to camouflage the wearer at different depths, whether it be near the surface, halfway down, or even at quite deep depths. So thereby potentially helping, surface versus divers, which would go deeper. So that's the sort of the two of the designs you can see here. These are camouflaged wetsuits of slightly bluey-green tinges, but of course this would be seen as shades of grey by the shark, not the colour that we, in fact, see them.
If these two wetsuits work on camouflage, there's one on the end there that's got these white stripes across a very dark blue background. This doesn't look very camouflaging to me. Does this work in a different way?
It certainly does, yes. The other design is quite the opposite. It's actually very high contrast presentation where it's black or blue with intermittent stripes of high contrast and low contrast. And yes, this will in fact make the wearer more obvious to a shark and will hopefully elicit the same behaviour but for a different reason. The different reason being that most sharks do not like striped patterns, as in they see striped patterns as being a deterrent, an indicator of something venomous. Normally, animals avoid such patterns in nature, and there's lots of examples how that works with sea snakes and various other animals that are also striped. So we have this conspicuous pattern that we've looked at, and the banding periodicity, if you like, is governed by, again, our research on the visual acuity of sharks. So we've actually assessed what their spatial resolving power is. So the patterns are actually designed to be obvious at a certain distance to a range of different predatory sharks.
While they haven't been able to test these wetsuits out on human subjects, there are some obvious ethical issues there. Sean and his team have been using barrels instead, and hopefully it won't be too long before they have some results out. So if you're a surfer, watch this space. And if science can help us to avoid shark attacks, can it also help us to conserve them? Because despite being more ancient than the dinosaurs, many species of shark are in real danger of extinction. Back to Jamie at Sea Life.
One of the big factors is overfishing for their shark fins, for their fins. There's a lot of sharks taken out, you know, estimates between 20 and 70 million sharks per year taken from the sea. That's just not sustainable for a species that's very slow to reproduce, and that's having a devastating effect. And for many of those sharks, all that's used is the actual fin in shark's fin soup, which is a tasteless broth, really, that has no real need for the shark fin anyway. There's artificial versions out there now, but it continues to be a very popular dish in certain parts of the world.
So what kind of things are being done to try and protect sharks?
Many things. Certain governments are trying to create marine protected areas where fishing is banned. Here we're trying to educate all of our guests that come through the door and inspire them to go away and campaign and sign petitions and get out there and really shout about these creatures and really care for them.
And just don't order the shark fin soup.
Absolutely, don't go anywhere near it.
And some good news did break last week as a major airline announced a complete ban of shark fin shipment. So hopefully we'll continue to be able to enjoy these fish in our oceans as well as on our screens. That was Jamie Oliver from Sea Life London Aquarium, and before him, Sean Collin from the University of Western Australia.
You're listening to The Naked Scientists with me, Chris Smith, and also with Georgia Mills. And this week, we're in the kitchen because we're looking at the science behind the perfect dinner party.
Recipes and techniques are often found by trial and error, passed on from one generation of cooks and chefs to the next. They appear to work, at least most of the time, but how many of us actually know the science behind what's going on?
Well, here's a bunch of people who ought to know. Let me introduce you to our dinner guests who are here. Adam Galeski is the head of chocolate and chocolate development at Hotel Chocolat. Wow, what are you going to be knocking up for us?
Okay, we're looking at making a couple of ganaches, which are super smooth emulsions, one with orange juice and one with cream.
Sounds delicious. Also here, Sue Bailey is a food scientist at London Metropolitan University. Hello, Sue.
Hi, hello.
You teamed up with Alex Rushman. Now, Alex is a MasterChef finalist. He's actually got his own award-winning restaurant. It's in Little Wilbraham. It's called The Hole in the Wall, and it's not far from here. But he's popped in this evening. You're going to do a bit of cooking for us.
I am, yes. I'm going to do a pan-fried fillet of white fish, in this case cod. I'm going to do it exactly the same way that we do it at the restaurant.
I was going to say to you, what we see on the telly with MasterChef, is that a real reflection of what it's really like? Is it really that pressured?
It is exactly as you see it. I mean, the time limits are very, very strict. It's the one of the most honest reality TV shows, I think, that's out there.
It obviously helped you, though, because obviously you've now gone on, you've started a restaurant, you've won awards.
I'm 6 years out of it now. They get me back occasionally to do some judging and critiquing, which is always good fun. But I've had my restaurant now for 5 years, and people keep coming back, we keep winning awards, it's fantastic.
Not just to complain.
And not just to complain, thankfully not, no.
Thanks, Alex. We'll join Alex later. You and Sue better get cooking because you're doing the main course, some white fish, as we heard.